shoot, they score!
Score!
We have put the coffee!
Hit the shot, he scores!
This week in the NHL.
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We got to be focused all 60 minutes.
This week in the NHL.
The most arrogant team he's ever played
against.
Do you
think that's more of a personnel issue or more of a
scheme
issue?
He's dominating like the Jets wanted him to do.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. Now Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening, TSN1290.ca. Good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. The Moose, of course, in the All-Star break, they get back in action tomorrow evening. Gentlemen, we start with the actions from last night at MTS Center. The Winnipeg Jets kick off their post-All-Star break portion of the schedule. 33 games to make or break the season, and they started off on a down note, losing last night to the Dallas Stars by a 5-3 margin. They would say they were the better team, maybe for two of the three periods. I would say close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades.
Yeah, well, it was another disappointing loss at the MTS Center for the Winnipeg Jets, and they looked like they were in control of the game for at least a half a period to a period, right, Drew?
Mm-hmm.
But it was another situation where a couple of defensive lapses, which led to a 3-on-0, which you rarely see these days in the NHL, Richie.
Which you rarely see these days, a 13-year-old. Huh?
Right. I guess it was a 2.5-on-0, really. You know, the Jets really are in a position where they have to at least get a point when they're playing against teams in their own division, right? And now they've lost to the Dallas Stars three times. They've got the Stars twice more. And I think a sign of a really good hockey team is when the team doesn't play very well and they're still able to leave the arena with 2 points. And that Dallas Stars team is a very good team. I know Richie really likes them, picked them to go to the Stanley Cup Finals this year. But it was a disappointing effort. And, you know, you could sit here and dissect the game. But at this point in the season and coming out of the All-Star break, it was just disappointing that the Jets weren't able to start it off on a positive note. Because as we know, after the game on Friday against Carolina, the Jets have 8 of 10 on the road. And they haven't been good on the road, Drew. So it's a tough situation for the Jets right now, and there's a lot of controversy surrounding Andrew Ladd, the comments by Paul Maurice that I know you want to play a little bit later, but It's just not a very good vibe around the Winnipeg Jets, and it's unfortunate because the last game before the All-Star break against the Arizona Coyotes, it was a good feeling in the MTS Center. Nikolaj Ehlers had the hat trick, Buff had a couple of goals, but you're looking at the standings right now, and you just can't afford, Richie, to leave a couple of points, even a point on the board against teams in your own division, as I mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Jets are done. Like, they're done, right? So We know that the Jets are done. And last night, maybe it was kind of the season as a whole on display, the result and how it all happened at the end and everything like that. But the Jets are done, and to me, the question is, how do you evaluate the next 30-some games? What does it mean? And what does management do in that 30 to 30-some games? And what about coaching, too? You know, I'm not saying here that coaches need to be fired, but because I think that's generally an extreme measure and an immediate reaction to problems. But this has been a disappointing season, I think, coaching-wise for the squad. The power play penalty kill combination is terrible. They're poor on both special teams units. And the team has lost a lot of close games. A lot of games that maybe you think they should have won, and certainly players bear responsibility in that, but so does the coaching staff. And I think the coaching staff has really gone without much blame. And just thinking back to Claude Noel, and Paul Maurice has done a better job than Claude Noel overall. I don't think there's really any question about that, but Claude Noel was certainly criticized more often, I think, than Paul Maurice has been. And this has been a disappointing season. So, you know, all of these things are factors now. The players are going to be evaluated. The plan going forward is going to be evaluated. What management does here with these free agents and the other decisions to be made. And then coaching. I think you're out of it, as far as I'm concerned, barring a miracle here. And then the question is, what are you evaluating? And And what are you using to evaluate it, I guess?
And Richie, not to say that Paul Maurice deserves most of the blame or the entire coaching staff, including Charlie Huddy and Pascal Vincent, they don't deserve all of the blame. But when you have the results that you have at this point in the season, early February coming out of the All-Star break, and you have a mathematical chance of making the playoffs, mm-hmm. but it's going to be very slim. The best the Jets can really finish right now is fourth or fifth in the division. I'd argue probably fifth. And with the way the points have been going, and as we mentioned, the road record unfortunately hasn't been good for the Jets, you have to look internally, right? You have to look at the coaching staff. I think the management might not look at it from now until the end of the season, but they're certainly going to look at it after the season, looking at the special teams. We had Claude Noel on, what was it, mm-hmm. 3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and we looked at the power play and the penalty kill, and the power play and the penalty kill was better under Claude Noel. And you had the same assistant coaches, right? So what's changed? I mean, sure, of course, Paul Maurice is the new head coach and has been the head coach for 2.5 years. But, I mean, as we know, coaches are hired to be fired. Not saying that necessarily Huddy, Vincent, or Maurice are going to be fired. But I agree with you, Rich. You certainly have to look at it because there are certain elements of this team that are lacking. And I think we'd all agree this was going to be a difficult year for the Jets, considering they just got so young and there were so many what-ifs, right? Well, can Burmistrov replace Frolik? Can Jim Slater be replaced by Andrew Kopp? Can Nikolai Ehlers provide enough offense mm-hmm. to replace mm-hmm. Stempniak and Tlusti? It was what if?
Right.
And so far this year, aside from maybe a career season from Blake Wheeler and the emergence of Connor Hellebuck, most of what could have gone wrong has gone wrong.
Yeah, and when you leave it up to too many toss-ups, that's the risk that you have. I think what you're going to see, I'm just looking in the crystal ball a bit, and I could be completely wrong, as I think what you're going to see is a possibility of the assistant coaches taking the fall eventually for the special teams problems, not being quote-unquote Paul Maurice coaches coming into the fold,
sure.
His choices, or at least his guys who had coached with him in the past, whomever that is. I'm not going to say I know who that is, and then making a switch there and them bearing some of the responsibility. I think that's probably a possibility, if not a good possibility. I'd say good. It's a possibility. And I'm not saying it shouldn't be. I mean, everybody needs to be held responsible here. But don't you feel like you watch...
Groundhog Day.
Don't you feel like the games are the same? Like,
yeah.
Yesterday was Groundhog Day.
So I guess
yesterday
that makes Paul Maurice Bill Murray then.
I suppose if you want to really stretch the analogy
that we can see.
Yeah, if you want to stretch the analogy further,
does that make Chevy Bill Murray?
Well, that's a fair point there, Ezzy. There's probably a question to be asked about that. Paul Maurice, I mean, of course, the Jets' penalty kill has been an issue all year long. The special teams have been an issue. Yesterday, technically only one power play goal scored against them. Really, in sure. actuality, was two, sure. as Byfuglien just stepped out of the box
right.
as the Stars tied it up. But if you look at the combined penalty kill and power play for the Winnipeg Jets, it's fourth worst in the entire NHL. If you look at the penalty kill specifically, it's 27th out of 30th. Paul Maurice addressed that earlier today when he met with the media. Here's Maurice's comments about who bears the responsibility for the special teams and the penalty kill troubles.
Where's the penalty kill on your list of priorities?
It's one. Yeah. Yeah.
Who's in charge of it, coach-wise?
I am. Okay. I'm in charge of everything.
Who coaches it, the minutiae of it?
I do. Yeah. I'm fully in charge of all things broken.
What's wrong with it?
Oh, there's a list, right? So it is a function of face-offs. But the biggest one for us is finding the balance between being aggressive when we can be and then being far more patient and not opening up seams like their first goal. So getting that balance back and forth.
He's certainly taking blame for the penalty kill or the special teams, as he should, as the head coach. I mean, he's not going to throw his assistant coaches under
Absolutely.
The bus in that situation.
That's the right thing to do there.
Yeah, and I think I would not be surprised in the least bit if you like what you said earlier, Richard, if there is a change in the assistant coaches in this organization have been the same since day one.
Yeah, and they're always the easiest target, right? I mean,
sure.
talk about it for 2 days,
aside
and
from
then
Perry
you forget
Pern.
About it.
Yes, that's yeah. fine. With the exception of Perry Pern
good
back,
point,
who was replaced with Claude Noel at the same time. That's a good point. I forgot about Perry Pern in that instance.
He was the biggest problem with the...
Hard to believe that he was the biggest problem with
Missing
the team.
Missing Perry at the Grove all the time.
Fair enough. Anyways, in addition to last night's disappointing contest, there were some issues regarding Andrew Ladd. Ladd missed a number of shifts during the course of the game where he was in the dressing room. You know, was it injury related? Doesn't sound like it. Was it something else. We're not 100% sure. When asked about it after the game, Ladd said, you know, let's just say it was injury related. I don't know exactly what that means. But Paul Maurice was asked after the game about the fact that Ladd wasn't on the ice when the Jets had pulled the goalie to try and get the equalizer.
So Andrew Ladd had a bag of ice on his ankle after the game. Is that the reason he wasn't out for the extra attacker?
No.
Can you share why?
Yeah, I had the other guys I wanted on.
By the way, quickly, I like the media is asking some good questions. I thought the penalty kill questions were good questions that need to be asked. I think that's a good question. I don't know who that was, but that's good questions.
I think it was Weber.
Yeah.
But I mean, the fact that, I mean, you hear Maurice's answer there.
You mean Ken Weeb there.
Yeah, sorry, Ken Weeb of the Winnipeg Sun, of course. You hear Maurice's answer there. Boy, it sounds like that's just that bridge is being napalmed day by day at this point in time.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't look good right now in terms of where he stands, you know, who he's playing with in terms of performing, expected performance with who he's playing with, comments like that. Yeah, you know, Drew, if you want to read into it, in one sense, you have Maurice taking the blame on the and kind of covering and not making an issue really of the penalty kill.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have him making a comment which is not directly making it an issue, but it's not trying to eliminate that issue.
That's right. He could have walked around that.
Could have walked around.
He could have said, "Oh, you know, he's a little banged up," or you know, whatever. It's an easy question.
You say that, and then the player says something different, so that you had to watch there.
It's an easy question to walk around without having us talking about it 24 hours
later.
Well,
what you say, one of the things you'd say is, you know, he wasn't out there tonight. We had a bunch of guys going. We thought could help us, but you know, no doubt Andrew's helped us along the way. He always is out there at the end of games he's for the most part out there at the end of games, and he will be out there at the end of games in the future. That's would take away a little bit more of the pressure.
Are we going to break here, Drew, or we have some time?
Quickly, go quick.
Well, I mean, reading into it, it could be a dangerous thing here with Andrew Ladd's pending UFA status. But regardless, you just expect Andrew Ladd to be on the ice, Richie. As you mentioned, with 2 minutes left over the last 5 years, you expect guys like Blake Wheeler, Brian Little, Buff, and Ladd is one of those guys. When the Jets need a goal, you just expect those guys to be out there regardless. And he did play after the injury, so he wasn't seriously injured. It wasn't like he didn't want to be out there. Andrew Ladd's already playing on the third line. You're expecting him to, at the very least, be in the top six. So it's not good. It hasn't been a good year for Andrew Ladd. Sure, is there a chance that he still signs? Yes. Is there a chance he's traded? There might be a better chance that he's traded. So it's been very difficult, and I think it's also been weighing down the team a little bit, I believe. I think the team has gone the way of Andrew Ladd. Other players too, Buff, Wheeler.
That's a fair point.
I feel like, you know, when Andrew Ladd is having a tough time, usually the team is too.
I agree with that point there. As you will
by the
talk,
way,
yeah, go ahead.
Before we go to break, Eitan brought us some cookies here. We got a guest in studio here. Got to give him a shout out. Anybody who brings us cookies and is a fan of the show,
you can pretty much.
We got to give him a shout.
If you offer us cookies, you can come to the live recording of the program.
No, he could have come regardless, but big thanks.
The cookies certainly help grease the wheel, as the case may be. Let's head to break. John Forslund, Carolina Hurricanes, they're next in town. He's their play-by-play broadcaster. He's going to join us coming up next. Much more on the Winnipeg Jets. We got Bufflin conversation. We got lots more about other players that potentially might be on the block. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment.
Do you have a cookie in your mouth?
Don't
there?
Be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as
put
well.
Put the cookies down, Drew.
Facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226. Or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
You gotta tell Les, right? Because you want a smoother read. Better go in for a checkup, Drew.
I thought you guys might try and let me get through that.
I hope Drew's been to see the dentist because of all this chocolate in his mouth. Like, it's going to have a cavity.
Thank you, boys. We're trying to get a hold of John Forslund from Carolina Hurricanes broadcaster. We'll bring him to you just as soon as we get in touch with him. Dustin Bufflin last night, you know, met with the media after the game and sort of clarified comments that I really didn't think needed much clarification. But here are the comments Dustin Bufflin made post-game yesterday.
Yeah, I would. I'd love to. It was, I've met a lot of good people and have some really good friends. I've been here for a long time. That's, you never want to leave home.
you know, been here long enough. It's, you know, family's been here and had two kids here. It's, you know, somewhere you don't want to leave.
I mean, I didn't think, I had no problems with the comments he made at the All-Star game to begin with, but he came out yesterday and he was pretty, you know, unequivocal about his desire to stay in Winnipeg, you know, smoothing the waters that weren't especially rough, I didn't think.
Yeah, well, we talked about this on Saturday's show, guys. I mean, the fact that those comments at the All-Star break were really extrapolated into some type of story was shocking. And Dustin Byfuglien has said repeatedly over the years that he likes it in Winnipeg. He likes the fans. It's close to home in Minnesota. And, you know, we also factored in the negotiations and the fact that he's not right. necessarily going to tip his hand and be goo-goo gaga and say he absolutely loves Winnipeg. He could have said that. And it's also part of his personality, Richie. I mean, Buff is the type of guy that, depending on what kind of day he's having, he's a little bit unpredictable.
Absolutely.
Right? So I wasn't surprised. Dave Manuk of illegalcurve.com was one of the first people to get those quotes out on Twitter. You know, they were retweeted many times because, I mean, everybody wants, I think, Buff to sign. Most people do. I mean, he's a fan favorite. We'd all agree he's having a great year. Absolutely. He had a great year last year. I mean, he's a two-time All-Star with the Jets, right?
The question is, did the Jets, what was the Jets' plans in terms of signing him, and has that changed? And it appears that I think they always had an interest in signing them on their terms for sure. Ezzy?
Yep.
And I think you're looking now as there is some public pressure there. Are they signing him now, and are they going to push it a little bit more, maybe not in terms as comfortable with them, partially because it looks like Ladd may not be back, and it's amazing how this has all changed, isn't it?
Yeah.
And partially because there is the pressure to make it happen, and you can't lose both.
You know,
it's kind of related to the Ladd one, of course.
Yeah, it really is fascinating how it's really been a sort of a 180-degree turn, and it hasn't in not that long of a time. It seemed for a while there.
I have to be honest with you, and we talked about the values of both players on the market. I don't think the values of both players have changed that significantly, if at all.
You don't think Ladd's value has changed?
Not really.
I'm surprised you say that. I mean, he's had a down year. If anything, Buff's had a... I mean, Buff has been Buff pretty much, you know, a typical year for him. You know, what you see is what you get. So I'm surprised you don't think that Ladd's value has diminished, you know, to some degree.
I don't think it's diminished too much on the open market. Maybe I'm wrong. I think you take a step back, he's had a poor year. But he's been a integral part of the squad and put up numbers that are worthy of a lot of cash on the open market.
Richie,
and are comparable to guys like Parise. So, I mean, sure, this season has been an off season, but there are other factors here to take into account: who he's playing with, the injury in the off season, the distraction. There are other factors here. So, you know, don't write him off. So I know he's becoming somewhat of a whipping boy, and I think that would be something that I think fans will come to regret if they did play a factor in that decision. And I don't know if they do. Probably not.
Richie, I think people want to think that his value has diminished quite a bit, but as you mentioned, this is still a guy who's won two Stanley Cups. It's still a guy who's coming off a career high in points. It's been the guy who's the captain of the Winnipeg Jets for the last 5 years.
Play in all situations.
Still play in all situations. So he's got 10 goals and 27 points, and he's going through a bit of a scoring drought. That happens. Yeah. I think the injury is something that other teams are going to be cognizant of and know that coming off of sports hernia surgery, that can affect your point totals. And I think that a team that is, if Andrew Ladd is on the trade market and a team is interested in acquiring Andrew Ladd, they're going to know exactly what they're getting. They're going to get a guy who hasn't missed a lot of games.
Sure.
What did we say? He's missed 20 games in his career.
He's like an ideal trade deadline acquisition.
He's an Iron Man type of player. Maybe not Andrew Cogliano levels, who's the current Iron Man, who's got the current Iron Man streak, but he is the type of player that is still going to garner a lot of interest, I think, and I don't think that his low offensive totals are going to impact that trade value that much. Maybe a little bit, Rich, but not that much.
Yeah, and you know what? The thing is when you get to the open market, we've said it before in the show many times, it takes one team that has a need for a scorer and a veteran scorer and would complement, and he's not an overly difficult guy to play with. I mean, there are guys who are difficult to play with, and John Forslund is going to hop on now. He broadcast Ladd's game to start off with.
Sure.
And, you know, he has a fairly simple game.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by John Forslund. John is the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster. John, really appreciate your time this evening. We know you got the Flames and the Hurricanes coming up in about 1 hour's time, so really appreciate you jumping on with us.
Hey, no problem, guys. My pleasure.
John, obviously, we were just actually talking about Andrew Ladd because, of course, that's the big topic of conversation here in Winnipeg and has been all season. So, you know, you're familiar with Andrew Ladd from his time in Carolina. You know, do you think that his value, just from an outsider's point of view, I'm not sure how much attention you've been paying to the saga in Winnipeg this offseason, but do you think that his, you know, value has diminished given his struggles this year? Or, you know, is he the perfect sort of trade deadline rental for a team that's looking for somebody to put them over the top?
Well, he might be that. I mean, I think the world of him. And yes, I have been paying attention to it. And I think, unfortunately for Andrew, based on the struggles, and that's all I see statistically from the outside, that's how the players are valued now today. And that's unfortunate because I think he brings a lot of other intangibles to the table from a team standpoint. And when they get into negotiations, I mean, a lot of times it's one side posting numbers, the other side looking at numbers and trying to find, you know, comparable to that player that will justify the amount of money that player wants. But he's one of those built-in guys I like to call because there's built-in value to what he brings to the table, I think. So if he does end up going to another team down the stretch, if they elect to do that, he's got a winning pedigree. He's going to be able to go and make a big impact. He's still a relatively young player. And as far as the Jets are concerned, I can't speak for them. I don't know where this has gone from a financial standpoint. I just hope the best for him because I've known him since we drafted him in Carolina and think the world of him.
John, do you see some parallels between Andrew Ladd and Eric Staal as far as what he's going through being a pending UFA? He's struggling a little bit offensively. Do you think that Eric Staal and Andrew Ladd, not necessarily relating to each other, but do you see kind of on a night-in, night-out basis that Eric Staal is having a rough time this year a little bit too?
A little bit. There's a little bit of a similarity, and there's also a difference because I think Eric has put the numbers up. He's had huge statistical numbers going back a few years now. But when you look at the draft class of 03, you know, he's got over 300 goals, and there's only a select number of players from that draft class that have done that. So, you know, he was able to put himself in a real good spot when his contract was up. Jim Rutherford wanted to make sure he would keep him long-term, probably had to overpay him a little bit to keep him in Raleigh, and did. But he's had a hard time over the last few seasons kind of justifying where he was at, you know, making an excess of $9 million a year. I think Andrew is trying to establish a foothold on his first really big contract. He's got a nice one, but, I mean, trying to take that next step. Eric has almost got to that level, and now they're going to have to determine, they being the team and also he and his representation, you know, where this is headed for him, you know, at 31. He's had a couple of significant injuries, a knee injury, a core problem. You know, he's had a couple of things here that I think have crept into his game over the last few seasons, and the team has struggled, and his game has kind of gone the same way.
Johnny, this young defense, you know, you get to watch Carolina play, and a really impressive young defense. Can you tell our listeners maybe about, people know about Justin Falk, but some of the other guys on the back end, can you give some of our listeners a background on those guys before Friday's game?
Yeah, Justin's a graybeard at 23 compared to the rest of these guys. You know, you've got three U.S.-born defensemen who have jumped in and done a remarkable job just in terms of their consistency and their composure under pressure. So Noah Hanifin, fifth overall pick last June's draft, real fine for the Hurricanes, fell into their lap. They had to take him. Best player, best defenseman on the board, did it, and he's played very well for an 18-year-old, just turned 19 before the All-Star break. The real surprises have been Brett Pesce and Jacob Slavin. Both are 21. Both were ticketed to play in the American League this year, but because of an injury on opening night to James Wisniewski, that opened up a spot for Pesce, and he's played in a top-four role most of the season. He's injured right now. I don't think he'll play Friday night. Slavin has been maybe the best of the three, and Jacob Slavin was a fourth-round pick in 2012, played at Colorado College, and coinciding with the hurricane surge, which came around the beginning of December, he was up, and then he had to go back down again, and they stumbled at the beginning of the month of December. It wasn't very good, and they brought he along with two other players back from the American Hockey League, and they put him right in the lineup and infused some energy, but he's played really well and has become a mainstay. So you will see him. All three skate really well. All three play with composure. They can get the puck out of trouble on their own accord. They make correct decisions with the puck, without the puck. They've done a really good job, and there's three of them. And so that's a big part of how the Hurricanes have kind of crept back into the race.
The Hurricanes are in the thick of the playoff race. John, we know that you got to run short and sweet, but we'll see you on Friday here in Winnipeg between the Jets and the Hurricanes. Appreciate your time this evening.
All right, guys, anytime. My pleasure.
Thanks, John.
Thanks a lot, John.
It's Head to Break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to NHL This Week, the segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Continuing on our conversation regarding the Winnipeg Jets and potential trades that may occur between now and the February 29th trade deadline. Of course, a reminder, special Monday edition of NHL This Week, trade deadline special, Monday, February 29th, a full day of coverage here on TSN 1290. Richie, you'll be joining Rick Ralph for the midday portion of that trade deadline day as well, so you can look forward to that. Should probably be a busy day, I'd expect.
You'd think so.
Yeah. Yeah. I would expect that. And we'll talk about the TSN has come out with their first trade bait board of the trade center season. Yeah. We'll talk about that coming up next segment. A lot of talk earlier in this week, a couple days ago, Pierre LeBrun of ESPN and TSN speculating that the Los Angeles Kings might be a destination for Dustin Byfuglien of the Winnipeg Jets. Raised my eyebrows when I saw that report, as I looked at the Kings roster, and I admittedly I don't know a ton about their prospects, but reading up on it doesn't sound like they have anybody overwhelmingly ready and to be dominant players in the NHL. And more so than that, can the Kings possibly acquire Dustin Byfuglien without having a first round pick in this upcoming draft?
Can they afford Dustin Byfuglien?
Another good question.
Is Dustin Byfuglien going to go anywhere? I think what's happened is, Pierre LeBrun in the article suggests that it's a possibility in his mind. Mm-hmm. I think this is what happens now in this day and age of rumors and being spread all over the internet. Unless I misread the article, in no point in the article did he say he was informed by an insider that was in fact what's happening. He said he thought it might make sense because of Slava Voynov's departure being a right side defenseman. There's two different things. One is you're hearing rumors that the Kings are interested in something, and many times those aren't inaccurate, but that's what he's hearing. That's his job to pass it along. Then there's his idea of it. And we talk about ideas all the time on this show about what could happen. And we're obviously not as connected as Pierre LeBrun, but I think we're getting a little bit carried away with ideas without any kind of substantiation. So I think, sure, it could go to any team on that basis.
Sure. Saying the Los Angeles Kings would be interested in him is you could say that about 30 teams.
But he said it could be a fit. There's other rumors he said it could be a fit as well. And I don't disagree with him that it could be a fit, but is it actually based on anything?
Dustin Byfuglien could be a fit on many teams, Richie, and I agree with you. I don't think it has been substantiated at this point. And when you look at the LA Kings, they made the move to acquire Vinny LeCavalier and Luke Shen from the Philadelphia Flyers in exchange for Jordan Wheel, who's kind of a B or C prospect. Mm-hmm. But if you want to talk about if Dustin Byfuglien would be a fit on the LA Kings, I think the style of play...
For sure.
And there aren't many teams, Richie, as you know, that play the style of the LA Kings now. There's a handful of teams, might be as few as three or four teams. You could throw the Blues in there, maybe the Columbus Blue Jackets, Drew.
Sure.
There are only a handful of teams that play that kind of down-low grinding style, and Buff could fit in nicely there, Richie. But again, first off, is he on the trade market? We don't know if he's on the trade market. The Jets might announce that Buff is going to be signed within the next week.
I mean they've made some calls on him over the course of the year, but I don't know if that means he's on the market, is he?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned off the top of the segment, Rich, it's just a thought,
actively,
right?
On the market, I mean. Yeah.
There's no legs to it at this point, because once Dustin Byfuglien is being shopped, Drew, then you're going to see things ramp up a little bit, and you're going to have to offer. And offer something substantive. And, you mentioned the prospects. Well, the LA Kings are not a team that has top prospects. I mean, if you're talking about their top prospect, is it Adrian Kempe, who was drafted in the first round a couple of years ago?
29th overall, if I recall correctly.
They're going to need some cheap talent, too.
They don't have the type of prospects that the Jets have. Yeah. Now, is there another fit there? I mean, do they look at moving someone else, possibly? This is a team that had salary cap issues at the beginning of the year with the whole Mike Richards and Slava Voynov. I could see it again being a fit, but I still think there's a really good chance the Jets sign Buff. So when this news came out, it didn't really surprise me because I think at this point, Drew, all 29 other teams have been linked to Buff and Ladd. let's be honest, guys. How many more articles can you read about where Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien can go? Like, can they go to the KHL?
Well, I mean, that's most
can they go play for Modo next year?
Yeah, like, they can play anywhere. Hey, I mean, if you're
an unrestricted free agent.
One thing also to note, just about if you want to address LA specifically, Dustin Byfuglien is a horse. He plays a ton of minutes. He's a right side defenseman who plays on your top power play unit. He would be behind Drew Doughty in LA, which may be great for LA if it's a prospective squad and an acquisition. Okay, but are you telling me that Dustin Byfuglien's going to love playing second line, second pairing defense minutes, second power play? Because are you going to have both of them on the same point, shooting the same way, and taking away a one timer? Probably not. You know, are you gonna like the limited minutes? Are you gonna like playing it within the structure of Daryl Sutter's team, who very rarely jumps out of position? That's not his game. So I mean, in theory, they're a big team and they could use skill on the right side. Sure, I just in practice, I think that's flawed. But again, it's only an idea. It's not even substantiated.
Any day now, the Winnipeg Jets are going to have a goaltending jam with Andrei Pavlik expected to come off of IR any time now. And there was an article about Andrei Pavlik's future with the Winnipeg Jets. Ken Wiebe, as we mentioned earlier in the show, linked him, thought there might be some logic about him possibly being linked to the Calgary Flames, given that the Flames do not have a goaltender under contract for next season, likely a starting goaltender for next season. And right now, Jets have a log jam. Would the Flames possibly be a destination for Andrei Pavlik?
Well, again, I think Ken is thinking of solutions to possible problems. Is there a substantiated comment there that the Flames have expressed interest? No, and I don't think he's represented that. If you look at it, I mean, is that a possibility? Sure. It's a rational thought. I would say that you'd probably have to add to that the idea of the Jets eating money on that. And whether or not they're willing to eat money on that is a different story. But I don't think you're trading that cap hit clear to Calgary, expecting much in return, and I don't see the Jets necessarily eating money on a cap, so I'm not so sure that will happen.
I just think there's a very low possibility of Andrei Pavlik being moved before the trade deadline, and the reason I say that is because are the Jets going to go into the heat of a playoff race and into the summer with really one prospect and someone who only has a year and a half of NHL experience?
Well, I don't know if that is as much of the issue as he is. I don't know if anybody is going to take him before the deadline.
You think so? You think that
that's also part of it.
You think that Pavlik's salary cap hit is more of an issue than what Ezzy's point is there?
Well,
about what it would do to the Jets.
It's an issue, but the other part is which team you're assuming. It doesn't always this case, but usually it's a contending team making a move pre-deadline before the draft, and they're formulating, putting together their entire roster. But which team going to the playoffs right now thinks Pavlik's a marked upgrade over who they have?
Probably none. In terms of goaltenders, probably none.
Also, Andrei Pavlik coming off of an injury.
Also true.
I mean, I just, and I'm not saying that Ken Wiebe doesn't bring up a good point.
No, here. I mean, I can see it making sense.
Andrei Pavlik might get traded. Point. I just don't see it happening because you go into next year with, sure, you have probably, arguably, the two best young goalie prospects. Eric Comrie just won the MVP at the AHL All-Star Game. Not saying that the Jets don't have capable goaltenders, but are you going to go into next season with Connor Hellebuck and Michael Hutchinson up in the NHL, Eric Comrie in the AHL, and then what happens if Connor Hellebuck gets injured, and then you have an issue with now you have basically another rookie goaltender in the lineup? I just think Pavlik is too valuable at this point to trade him.
We give you a lot of flexibility. If you're going to be a cap squad, it would give you a lot of flexibility money-wise to do different things.
That or would other Jets players, I think we're in agreement pretty much that the season has bottomed out here, and it's, you're looking towards next year at this point in time, given that they have some players who are coming up who are going to be unrestricted free agents at the end of next year, namely Drew Stafford and Matthew Perreault are the two big names I would talk about here. Do you think the Jets should be exploring the market for them as we approach February 29th? Or is that too soon and they wouldn't really – they need some NHL bodies for next season?
I don't think they would look at those two guys specifically just because Drew Stafford was just signed to a contract last summer. And both Stafford and Perreault are just too valuable, Richie. I mean, you're talking about a team that has struggled to get offense from the bottom two lines, right? Mm-hmm. And Matthew Perreault and Drew Stafford have been fairly consistent, especially Drew Stafford when he was moved up from the third line to the second line. He's played even some on the first line. And when you're talking about Matthew Perreault, I mean, he's been a catalyst for the offense, especially when you need a guy to move from the second line to the third line.
Very, very flexible, very useful.
I don't see either of the
smart player.
And if you watch this team too, I mean, aside from Blake Wheeler, the two players that I think when you take them out of the lineup, they miss their speed and creativity the most are Matthew Perreault and Mark Scheifele, aside from Wheeler. And then maybe fourth is Drew Stafford in there. So I don't see those players moving before the trade deadline or at all next year, to be honest with you, Drew. Does that mean that any other players aside from Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien are going to be moved? Potentially, but I don't see them being top six forwards.
I guess the question is, who else on the squad is desirable to move? And you're going to get the talk about Enstrom, right? That's going to be another guy that's going to come up. And that is, I mean, again, who's playing on your left side if you're getting rid of a guy? I know some people aren't the biggest fans of him, but he does things that I think are underappreciated, and who takes his spot.
It's your top pairing defenseman, Richie.
Appreciate significant cap, and I appreciate his power play. His skills in the power play haven't resulted in a ton of production. Having said that, you need to have guys to replace him, and if you don't, then what are you icing? And then are you? You have to be on the same page here. You can't get rid of all your defense and keep your forwards because then nobody's getting on the pot.
Well, if you're getting rid of, I mean, if you're going to bottom out for next year as well.
I mean, you're right, bottoming out right now with the team you have.
Right.
So how many more moves you need to make?
To bottom out further. Yeah. I mean, how bad do you want to be? And I don't think that they want to be. I mean, I think that
don't need a facelift to be a better team than they are now. We've documented that, you know, as you mentioned, the bottom two lines, the depth scoring, and a little bit of improvement on the depth blue line and all that stuff. There are ways to improve, but which way you going?
And Richie, I think it's a valid question that Drew brings up, because if you're going to be out of the playoff spot, and the Jets are quite far out of a playoff spot right now leading up into the trade deadline, I think you have to explore options that make your team better in the long term, right?
Oh, 100%.
So you're not going to make moves, you know, just for early next year, or that's something that you're going to have to explore in free agency. So if it is going to be somebody that doesn't factor into the plans next year, then, yeah, you look at moving them, maybe getting a draft pick.
It's an interesting thing. I mean, you know, what is it? What's going to happen? You don't know. We have no more of a clear idea than we did months ago. Maybe the emotional reaction has changed to the two pending free agents, from the fan base at least. But what else has changed in giving you a picture into the future? Like Hellebuck's performance.
To your point about the fan base and maybe the opinions, are you surprised at the vitriol that Andrew Ladd seems to be subjected to?
I am. I see it. I am. I, you know, people get frustrated. They want to see. They want to have to blame somebody who for the team struggles as a whole. And he's an easier target because he's had a poor year. But I do see the Jets fans kind of pushing back a little bit and being a little bit more expressive about how they feel about the squad. Like, I kind of feel like the Jets fans are the person in the relationship who doesn't feel worthy. And they're finally pushing back a little bit, and maybe we are as a fan base worthy, and this is an NHL town, and we can push back and say we deserve better. I kind of feel like that's coming out a little bit more now.
But that's not towards Andrew Ladd so much as it is the organization,
the team as a whole, and management, and the coaching staff. You know, I mean, you are at a point now where if they do miss the playoffs, you're looking at 5 years of no playoff victories. Obviously, the playoff appearance is a significant milestone and counts, but the four seasons out of the playoffs. And when we're asking this many questions about where it's going, that means we likely don't know where it's going or have a pretty good idea from what we've seen. And I'm assuming the fan base may not agree with us. They may. And if they do agree with us, then they're asking the same questions, and it's valid. And I think that is resulting in frustration.
And Richie, to answer Drew's question in a different way, or to approach it in a different way, I mean, is it unfair that Andrew Ladd is receiving a lot of criticism? Well, the Jets haven't played well, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And he's the captain, and he hasn't performed individually
for
well.
Sure.
And he's in a contract year, so fans are going to be critical of that. Is he the main reason why the Jets have struggled this year? Absolutely not. And
he's one of the reasons.
He is one of many reasons why the Jets have struggled.
For sure.
I mean, we talked about it. The special teams. The record in their own division has been atrocious.
Well, I mean,
The road record has been atrocious.
The fact that they had three injuries and they can't put any NHL players out there to fill the spot.
Sure. I mean,
that is a huge problem.
You could dissect it for hours. And
exactly.
I guess we're doing it here.
One of many problems.
Right. But I definitely don't think that it should be a situation where everybody has forgotten all of the good things that Andrew Ladd has done for this team. He led the team in scoring.
I agree with you.
He was the first guy to sign.
I agree with you.
It's been a tough year for him as well. I mean, I think if you'd ask him, and he has been asked quite a bit this year,
sure.
He certainly said it's been tough. He doesn't look like he's having fun out there, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It hasn't been a fun year for Andrew Ladd. So I think regardless of what happens, you know, he's done a pretty good job for the Jets. But at the end of the day, fans want results. Fans want wins. As Richie mentioned, you know, the Jets haven't had a playoff win yet. Fans expect a lot of out of this team. This isn't the first or second year that the Jets are back anywhere, guys. Like, fans are paying big money for season tickets.
Right.
They want to see a team in the playoffs.
We are 26 days away from the trade deadline. TSN has published their first trade bait board. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. 10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week, the segment of the show brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. As I mentioned before the break, gentlemen, the TSN trade bait board has been published for the first time with the trade deadline a little more than 3 weeks away. At the top of the board, Dustin Byfuglien.
Have we published the Illegal Curve trade bait board?
No, but you should do that, Ezzy. Why don't you create
that? Yeah, it's actually a charcuterie board.
It's just us eating deli is what it is. It's the board that we eat our deli meat off of.
I've been on that board every year, I think. Right?
Yeah, you're the board of directors, I think, and in fact, yeah. Dustin Byfuglien.
Chairman of the board.
Chairman of the board, the board of directors. Yeah, exactly. Dustin Byfuglien at the top of the trade bait board. We've, I think, talked enough about Buff and that saga for...
I think that's
for 50 minutes straight.
Can we pass
today
on that, Drew?
We can talk about we can pass on the Byfuglien line.
Sure.
But number two on the trade bait board surprises me personally. And according to the TSN board, they have Jonathan Drouin of the Tampa Bay Lightning as the second most appealing person on the board for the trade deadline.
The question is, Drew, why does that surprise you?
It surprises me because I don't know that you know what you're getting if you acquire Jonathan Drouin, where there's guys that are lower down on that board who are bona fide NHL players who have had tremendous success in the NHL.
With it being a trade deadline board, Drew, I think I agree with you there.
Thank you.
Hang on,
you're agreeing with me? I'm leaving for the rest of the show. I'll be
gone.
If
it's just a trade board in general, it's different.
Different. If it's an off-season trade board, it's...
Or just, not before the deadline. That's fair.
This board indicates who's more likely to be moved, not necessarily who is the most desirable, right?
Well, I don't know, because they have Roman Polak at 7.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, which Leafs influence had an effect on that?
The Roman Polak's existence caused my eyebrows to raise.
I couldn't believe he was on the list at 7.
Yeah.
Well, he's got 10 points, so, I mean, what are you getting there, a fourth rounder?
I couldn't believe Roman Polak was... Can you read for the listeners, Drew, who's ahead? Who he's ahead of?
Roman Polak, 29 years old, defenseman on the Toronto
he's
Maple
a
Leafs.
He's a 5'6 guy. He's a right side, third pairing guy. He's solid on his skates.
He's ahead
he's
of
big.
Three guys
he's
that tough. Are in the Olympics.
Yeah, like that's what I mean.
He's ahead of three guys who've scored some significant number of goals.
Did Polak play in the Olympics for Slovakia?
He may have been an Olympian, but he wasn't an especially dominant Olympian.
Thank you, Drew.
He's ahead of Radim Verbata of the Vancouver
40
Canucks.
40-goal season.
I mean, that's a guy who can score goals. That's a guy who can really help you on your top two lines.
He's ahead of Dan Hamhuis, who obviously is not going to get the goals for you, but he was an Olympian as well for Team Canada.
Yeah, and he's a better defenseman
than
Roman Polak.
Yuri Hudler was top 10 in the NHL in scoring last year.
And Yuri Hudler of the Calgary Flames, who was absolutely tremendous. He was more than a point a game, I think, last season for the Flames. So somehow Roman Polak's ahead of those players.
Oh, he's on Toronto Maple Leafs, that's how you know.
Yeah. Roman Polak is a bruising defensive defenseman. I mean, he's a good veteran in the room. And, you know, he's got a little bit of offensive ability. I don't think he's a guy you're going to put out there on your first or second power play, Rich.
Know that.
But, I mean, he's going to get traded because the entire Toronto Maple Leafs team is going to
get
traded.
Because they signed a bunch of guys that nobody wanted, and they've been talking them up in the media for 7 months, and now they're going to trade him to the teams that didn't want him in the offseason. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Much. Well, that's what they did last year with, I mean, with Nashville. Daniel Winnick, and who went to Pittsburgh, and,
Cody
of course,
Franzen.
Mike Santarelli and Cody Franzen. I mean, that's smart asset management by the Leafs.
I disagree. I'm just wondering with the other 29 teams.
Well, fair enough. But anyways, let's go back to the board. Drouin, number two on the board, which I'm surprised about.
Yeah, but I mean, talent-wise.
Talent-wise, sure.
Yes.
Well,
but
also, you shouldn't be surprised, Drew, just because of the fact that he is not going to ever play for the Tampa Bay Lightning again, most likely just the way he's reacted and behaved down in the AHL,
sure.
Right?
Well, so, I mean, not playing for any of the team.
They're trying to move him, but the question that we asked Joe Smith of the Tampa Bay Times, what was that a couple of weeks ago, was, is he going to get traded, and how much does that suspension affect his ability to be traded? Because now teams are looking at this guy and saying, well, he doesn't have a very good attitude. Do we want this guy on our team? And again, I mean, he's 20 years old. He can mature still, and he can clean up his act. But as far as Jonathan Drouin goes, I agree, Drew, that he is a player that you don't necessarily know what you're going to get. Does he have oodles of potential? Okay. Absolutely. I mean, he's a third overall pick. He tore up the QMJHL playing with Nikolaj Ehlers for 1 year in Halifax. But at the NHL level, so far his career has kind of stalled a little bit. He's certainly fallen out of favor with John Cooper in Tampa Bay. But I still think he's going to get moved.
I'm not convinced he's going to get moved before the trade deadline, but he's certainly going to get moved before the start of next season.
I'll
make you a bet. I'll bet you a cookie that he gets traded.
Fair enough.
I thought you were going to transition that to Eric Staal with the Staal comment. But I think the interesting guy on this list, and we talked about him, was it last week? Louis Erickson.
He's third on the list.
And what happens with Boston and re-signing him or not re-signing him, and apparently he's more on the market.
He's having a good year this year.
Well, he's having a good year, and I feel like him and Ladd, mm-hmm. I mean, Staal too, but a little bit lesser, a big ticket and all that. Him and Ladd are going to be guys that teams are interested in. And you wonder if one team gets to one, does that help or hurt your chances of getting more? Meaning, like, is the best offer going to be the guy who goes first? Or is the best offer going to be the team that loses out on one of those guys?
Sure.
Wingers who can score, you can trust. You know, Louis Erickson's kind of an underrated two-way guy. He's got a good shot. Ladd's got a good shot.
Yeah.
You know, Erickson is more comfortable coming off the off wing. And, he skates really well. You don't need a lot. He doesn't draw. And he's not a high-maintenance guy, I guess you'd say. Neither is Ladd, really. So you think both those guys are going to be highly desirable trade deadline acquisitions. And both of them are at cap hits. Ladd is at 4.4. Mm-hmm. Louis Erickson is at 4.25. I mean, you're reasonable cap hits. You're veteran players, 30 years old.
Sure.
You've been on teams. You've played with a lot of different players. You play with skill. I think that's going to be two guys very desirable, and I wonder how that plays out, because I think the market will be similar for those two guys.
Erickson, of course, was acquired by Boston as the centerpiece in the Sagan trade going back a number of years ago now. But, you know, those are two guys, both, and I agree with that. I think there's a lot of similarities between the two. They're two guys who can play in the top six, or if they're on your third line, I think you probably have a dominant third line if those guys are on your third line.
Yeah, and I mean, you're not paying them a ton, so I mean, the cap it wise, so that's benefit. But both of them are top six forwards for sure, Drew.
In terms of rentals, they're relatively easy to fit into most structures, because most of the money, of course, has been paid through the course of the year.
Right.
So you're paying for them for what? Maybe a fifth of their salary, maybe the last 20 games of the season, give or take?
Yeah.
So,
a quarter.
Yeah, a quarter of the salary, whatever it is. So you'd be a little over $1 million is what needs to be fit under a respective team's salary cap. Those are real attractive acquisitions at the trade deadline.
Right, and we got in a little bit of trouble a couple of weekends ago talking about the Boston Bruins salary cap issues, but the point I think we were trying to
did
make...
Did Don Sweeney call? And
no, get a call from Jack Edwards?
No, it was actually Cam Neely, but it was Cam Neely
Seabass.
It was Seabass. You took the joke before I could say it. But we know that he doesn't fit. It doesn't look like, Richie, that he fits into the long-term salary cap picture for the Boston Bruins, and they've got other younger players, whether it's a David Pasternak or a Ryan Spooner, guys that they're going to have to pay money. They know they're going to have to pay, right?
They got to get somebody on the back end too, right?
Right.
It's
not the same Boston Bruins defense. I mean, they're in the playoff race right now. They're right in it. But does he factor into that long term, right? And, you know, you've got some younger players that are coming up. We know Dougie Hamilton was traded because that contract situation didn't work out for them.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like, as you mentioned, Drew, Louis Erickson's going to be a good rental. I mean, look at teams, whether it's in the East or West, that are having some difficulty scoring goals. I mean, whether it's the Montreal Canadiens or whoever it is, I mean, he'd fit in really nicely either on your first line or second line.
You can kind of drop him in. I mean, it's kind of like Ladd. You can kind of drop him into any team.
Well, they're not going to trade him to Montreal, by the way, but the biggest rival of the Boston Bruins.
That's fair, but you look through as you're fair. That's absolutely right. You look through the roster, and there's a bunch of teams that can use either of those guys.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Bob McKenzie with some suggestions on a new playoff format for the NHL. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. I feel like I'm in a video game with this music there, Chris. Welcome back to NHL This Week, second hour of the program here on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. All week long at Rumors, Nigel Lawrence is in town. 780-1290. Call us right now. Caller number 3. You're going to win 4 tickets to see Nigel Lawrence at Rumors this coming Saturday night, the 10 p.m. show. Nigel Lawrence at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Caller number 3 right now at 780-1290.
Now, I don't know if you guys caught a lot of Hustler and Lawless today live from San Francisco Super Bowl Radio Row, but they were talking quite a bit about Rumors when they had Jay Moore on.
I did catch that.
Jay Moore, I think...
The former Rangers defenseman?
Yeah, no, a different Jay Moore. But
Jay Moore from, you know
the
him
comedian.
From... Yeah, the comedian
I know
from... If you've seen Jerry Maguire and a lot of other movies, he's got his own radio show, but it was pretty funny. He was basically saying, like, hey, Rumors, give me a call. I want to be there. And Gary was offering to have Jay Moore stay at his house, and I don't think he was too interested in that.
That's probably not helping the deal get made. I got to say that Gary's offering up his own accommodations.
Drew, I think if Jay Moore was to stay with Huss, then he would for sure come. Like, yeah, I feel like staying a couple of nights or 4 nights or whatever it is with Huss, like that, would he would want to, like, you know, go out, hang out with Huss.
The only downside to that is I'm not sure Jay Moore would make it to his actual stand-up comedy shows if he spent 4 nights, roaming the streets of Winnipeg with Huss.
No such thing as having too much fun, Drew.
There is for me, you know. Love fun. I'm anti-fun more often than not.
Like, the new fun is changing diapers.
Changing diapers at 3 in the morning.
And
bathing myself, that sort of thing. But, yeah, changing my diapers, yes,
I'm just
exactly.
happy that I got your daughter a present because you wouldn't let me hear the end of it. I mean, you were texting me, calling me.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
You did get the baby
and it was
a
the
gift.
Best present you said that she's gotten.
It was a very nice present. You did well there, Ezzy. Don't worry about it. Bob McKenzie, in an article today on TSN.ca, looking at potentially if the NHL should change or expand its playoff format, perhaps adding some single-game eliminations a la baseball for their wild card spots. You know, what do you think of the NHL's current 16-team format for playoffs? Is this something that needs to be fixed? Is this a problem as far as you're concerned?
We should have more teams in the playoffs.
They're talking about expand. I know why general managers want to expand it.
Of course, because it makes them look better.
Of course.
20 of them made the playoffs, and they all think they were successful. I mean, how many more teams? You already have more than half the teams making the playoffs. You're going to add more teams to this league, which is already it's scary. And then you want more teams to make the playoffs? I mean, I understand within the context of the article, they talk about having the teams who are more successful at the top of the division get a greater benefit for doing that. Mm-hmm. So if you want to have a play-in of a one-game elimination shorten the playoffs up and have the teams that finish at the bottom of the standings play each other in kind of battle royale before they get to the next round and those teams are rested, I have more time for that. But you don't need any more teams, Drew. 16 is more than enough.
If the rationale for this, Drew, is that there are going to soon be 32 teams, right? There's most likely going to be expansion
sure.
in the next 3 or 4 years to Las Vegas and Quebec City. I think that's the common, especially based on the fact those were the only two cities that applied for expansion teams, right? But if you're kind of going by that logic that there should be the same percentage of teams, right now there are 16 out of 30, which is 53%. 53% of 32 is 17. You can't have one team from a conference. So you're most likely going to have, what, 2 more teams, Rich, in the playoffs? 1 wild card in each conference? I mean, I wouldn't have a huge problem with it, but
the playoffs are going to start in March, and they're going to go all the way through the next September.
Well, I think, Drew, the biggest issue, and I think you guys would probably agree with this, the biggest issue right now is that there are too many points awarded just for getting to the shootout. I mean, to me,
that's arbitrary to make sure teams look like they're close so everybody can look, right. the league can look competitive.
Right.
You know what the problem is? The regular season's too long. it's never going to change. I readily admit that what I'm, that when I say the regular season's too long,
there's too many games in baseball too, but that's not going to change.
Yeah, well, that's because that's where they make the money. They make their money off of the attendance. I mean,
the difference is in baseball. Go ahead, Drew.
Well, I was just going to say, truthfully, I think the regular season could be 70 games long. You know what?
Never going to happen.
I know it's never going to happen.
Baseball, you had four teams, now you have five, and it ends up being four. After the one game plan, okay? Yeah.
Baseball's playoffs.
30-team league, 15 teams in each conference.
And they say that to win the Stanley Cup, it's the greatest challenge in sports because you have to win four best of seven series and everything else. And I get the battle and the adversity you have to overcome to make it into the playoffs.
But what's the problem with the playoffs right now? Does anybody see a problem with the playoffs?
No.
Like, I mean, you have a lot of teams. Fine, you come to accept that. But does anybody ever complain about the playoffs?
No, everybody suffers through 82 games of a regular season to get to the playoffs.
Do we just change it to start having battles annually of division rivals? Can we let that happen for a little bit here? Does everything need to be changed every 5 minutes?
Well, the general managers want to change because, like you said, it makes, I made the playoffs. I lost in a one-game elimination. Rich, look at me. I made the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's get Drew out of here. Let's bring Chris in to host.
Chris, you want to host?
Is that because you're changing things up all the time?
You can change whenever you want.
Okay, well, there you go. I had a good run. It was a good seven years.
What's the reason, to Richie's point, what's the reason for doing this?
There isn't one. It's just,
and if there isn't a reason, usually if there isn't a reason, it's something that shouldn't be done. Like, again, that's the whole thing I sound like a broken record here, but why was the shootout brought in? I mean, what has the shootout really accomplished for hockey? It's really just inflated point totals for teams, right? And I don't think there is any entertainment value to it anymore.
No, it's not.
I like the 3-on-3 overtime. Get rid of the shootout. There's no shootouts in the playoffs.
You watch what they'll do because they want to make more money and they want to, quote-unquote, create more excitement. They'll have four wildcard teams who will each play each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
In one-game eliminations.
Which is what McKenzie suggests.
To make more
suggests.
Money, and then they'll just push it through to the next round. Everybody will say, isn't this great? Isn't this exciting? And I'm saying, well, might as well have 21 play 30 and 22 play 29. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we'll just make keep going. Everything a one-game elimination. I mean, it is just silly. You're absolutely right. The playoffs, if you want to change the playoffs, the idea I like, and I think this is Eric DeHatchick's idea from way back, is that if you finish first overall in your conference, you get to pick your opponent in the first round.
Great idea.
I mean, that to me would be exciting. I mean, you have a team that feels disrespected going up against a dominant team.
Or in this case, for example, you have the Los Angeles Kings, who may want to play the third place team in their division and has to play the crossover team. And you're not getting them the benefit of finishing first overall. Yeah, that's what you're trying to eliminate, and that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that would be a way to, if you really want to make the NHL stand out, that's the way to do it. All of a sudden,
only the first two teams get that benefit.
But again, Drew,
in that proposal, it's only the first two teams, the top,
and then the other two would just sandwich.
Sure, and then everybody else.
But
and it could be that you're trying to sabotage another team. Sorry, as you could be trying to sabotage another team with who they're playing and all that. You can make it really, really interesting. But you don't need that either, really. Like,
change the topic. No, because you said you have to change everything all the
time. Yeah,
Drew, I think earlier you mentioned. Well, Rich was saying that
really fell. That was weak there.
Everybody knows I'm the funniest guy on the show. So
that's true. That's 100%
true.
It's not a high bar to...
Richie's also funny. Drew's getting better. But I digress. The reason why you make a change is not because I think to stand out. I think if you're going to make, I mean, the hockey, I think, and again, we've talked about this quite a bit throughout the year. I think hockey is in a great position, and I think that there's always this need for change. Sometimes you're looking for change when there isn't a problem or you're not addressing anything. You're just changing it for maybe because the lack maybe it's boredom, Richie. I don't know. But I think, especially as Rich mentioned, once you get to the playoffs, first round of the playoffs, I think, is the most exciting time in any sport. I mean, I love baseball, love basketball, love football. The Super Bowl is great. I love all of the NFL playoffs. But I think the first round, I mean, I'm a hockey guy, so maybe I'm a little bit biased, but I don't think that there's any problem with it. Like, to me, sudden death hockey is the best thing that's out there.
Yeah.
And people, the NHL doesn't need to stand out. I mean, the NHL, the All-Star game was a huge success. TV ratings were great. The World Cup, even though, you might not like the format, I bet it's going to grow the game. The NHL is going to go to the Olympics in 2018. I truly believe that. I mean, hockey's in a great position.
They will, because this is what's going to happen. They will likely expand, because if you look at it right now, if you were to add two more wildcard teams for a play-in game, it's just, I mean, it really never ends, right? If you were to add two more wildcard teams for a play-in game. You'd have Minnesota and Arizona, and right now the Jets would be 6 points back, and we'd be talking about how the Jets are only 6 points back, mm-hmm. and we'd be talking about it until April 7th, whenever it is. The Jets are 4 points back, and it gets everybody artificially included.
That's already what happens with the three-point game. Yeah. So they want it. It's just natural. You're right. It's the natural next progression to keep fans' interest through an 82-game season when, you know, the teams that aren't currently in the playoffs, there's a reason why they're not currently in the playoffs.
Yes, that's true.
It's because they're bad. And they don't deserve to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know, with all due respect.
It's 82 games. You're right. I mean, it's 82 games. Like, if you're not good enough to make it 82 games, I don't really want to see you in the second week of April playing on opening night. It's okay.
I've seen enough of you. Yeah. I don't want to watch you anymore. You're lousy. Yeah. It's pretty much what it boils down to. Before we head to break, big congratulations to Bob Borgian. He won the 4 tickets to check out Nigel Lawrence at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
There's only one problem.
Saturday.
We're going with him.
Yeah. Bob doesn't know that. Yeah, it's himself plus us three to make the 4. That's the downside. We don't tell him that until after he wins.
We'll buy him some nachos.
Chris, you'll come too. Everybody will come. It'll be a nice party.
There's not going to be any cookies because we've eaten them all.
That's true, too. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the suggestion from Francois Gagnon of RDS that the Montreal Canadiens should trade their core players, including...
Well, that's a terrible idea.
Including a defenseman named P.K. Subban.
Terrible idea.
You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290, this segment of NHL This Week brought to you by the Rady Fitness Center, official fitness facility of Illegal Curve Radio. With 52,000 square feet of gym space, new equipment, and a saltwater pool, get back in shape and reclaim your glory days at the Rady Fitness Center. For details and to save up to $100 off a new membership, visit RadyJCC.com/IllegalCurve.
I saw you doing some planks at the Rady group.
Yeah, I was doing some planks. I was doing some lunges. I was doing some squats. You know, the whole nine yards. And now I'm good probably for the next year or so.
Not a lot of people know this, but Drew's a good golfer.
He's a good golfer.
And I'm not joking right now. Good tennis player.
Also true.
Mm-hmm. And very strong. I've seen him lift a man twice his size over his head. He dropped him right after.
The guy fell on top of me, and I collapsed under the weight of it all. But it was a good attempt and everything. I think we're a little bit hyper this Wednesday. I like
it. Yeah.
A little bit of energy.
Well, I'm on Red Bull number 2, so.
That's number 2?
I don't even know what's in Red Bull, so.
Those heart palpitations, I think that might be part of the reason why it's happening there.
I already had those from the Illegal Curve sandwich.
Yeah, after the Rady Center workout.
Yeah. Anyways, as I mentioned before the break, Francois Gagnon of RDS talking about the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, the Canadiens' free fall.
Hold on, did you watch Carey Price skate around the rink today in his jacket and sweatpants? That was actually a video. You could go online today.
You can go right now on TSN.ca.
And you can watch Carey Price skate around the ice and favor his right leg. And then you can...
You forgot the best part. He broke his stick. What does the broken stick mean, Richard? It's the Zapruder film of the NHL this week.
You could
right
also
now.
This week, we'll talk about McDavid later. You could also this week apparently watch Connor McDavid, the Oilers game day skate, live on Tuesday during the day because Connor McDavid was skating in it.
That goal he scored last night.
That doesn't bother me nearly as much because watching Connor McDavid skate... is worth the price of admission.
It's practice.
I'm kidding. I'm obviously kidding.
We're talking about practice,
this
man.
It's getting out of hand. It's getting out of hand.
You know what's even scarier? What's even scarier than me at the Rady is the fact that the Toronto Maple Leafs are only 7 points behind the Montreal Canadiens after the Montreal Canadiens started the season winning their first 9 games. Like, the Montreal Canadiens fall has been incredible. I mean, we talked about it when Carey Price went down the second time, Drew, with his injury. We all talked about it and said, of course the Montreal Canadiens are going to miss Carey Price. He's the reigning Hart Trophy winner. He's the best goalie in the world, in most people's opinion. And I don't think anybody, though, expected the Montreal Canadiens to be this bad. They've won 2 of their last 10. They're outside of a playoff spot right now. It's really incredible how far they've fallen.
David Nuke tipped me off to him. I'm sure that's on the internet, or he was surfing through. The Canadian teams, they fill out spots 22 through 28 in the NHL overall standings consecutively.
But the
Montreal, Ottawa, Vancouver, Winnipeg, Calgary, Toronto, Edmonton.
Yeah. The television ratings plummeting in come April when the playoffs start is the sound you're hearing right now.
I don't know about that. I think Canadians are going to watch hockey.
Well, you'll always get your ratings, yeah. But the big time,
Let me put it this way. Yeah. They'll go to the sponsors and they won't be able to get any more money out of the sponsors.
That's
where it'll hurt them.
Well, and there's still the chance that Canadian teams make the playoffs.
Canadian team?
There's a lot of, Montreal for one.
Right now, Montreal, if they don't turn it around, is going to finish as the 30th team in the NHL.
If they continue in this horrendous pace, Drew.
No sign of Carey Price being able to come back really anytime soon. What makes you think that they're not going to continue at this pace? I mean, if this goes on for another 2 weeks,
I think it's. Montreal will correct itself, Drew, eventually here.
Three months.
The problem you have is that Pittsburgh looks better.
Crosby looks great.
And they're in the bottom. I thought he was done.
No.
They're in the bottom wild card spot. What happens with Boston is interesting, but aside from that, which team is really going to fall hard?
Well, right now I think it's the Montreal Canadiens are the team that's falling hard. But I mean,
if
you go another 3 weeks and Carey Price is no sooner, coming back than he is today, aren't you better off shutting him down for the season at that point?
If you're out of it, yes, you shut him down. If you legitimately have very little chance to make it, then you do shut him down.
Right now, based on the numbers, their wins and their points accumulated in, I think, November and December and January and so far, obviously early in February here, they're going to finish as the 30th team in the NHL. They're going to
be the best thing that ever happened to them.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Come back next year with Austin Matthews on your roster, along with a healthy Carey Price. Why would you ever consider breaking up this Montreal Canadiens team, as Francois Gagnon suggests?
Well, let's get into the Francois Gagnon suggests. I mean, he covers the team, obviously, on a daily basis. We do not.
Mm-hmm.
From RDS. Do you consider making, Drew, you can point to it, do you consider moving one of your big names? I think when you start doing that, what usually happens is you trade quality for quantity. You're trying to fill too many holes in the roster with one of your best guys, and I don't think that's the solution here. Frankly, they have two top guys, in Subban and Price. I mean, Pacioretty is a close third, mm-hmm. in terms of the value and his great contract. But after that, you have a drop off, and Galchenyuk has not been what they expected him to be or what they had hoped for him to be. He hasn't. And you know what you're going to get out of Brendan Gallagher overall. Obviously, had the injury, and one of the things we talked about at the outset of the season is that they pay quite a bit on that back end there, and that back end isn't as good as I think what they're getting paid. And I think that's a factor too that we haven't discussed. And the lack of infusing the roster with young players on a consistent basis has hurt them as well. I mean, with Carey Price, they're still, to me, they're a playoff team, but they're not a great team. They're not a dominant team. They're not a team that would, aside from a crazy Carey Price run, which is of course possible because of how good he is, mm-hmm. is really a threat to take it to the cup.
Well, then,
and so,
if you take Francois Gagnon's suggestion and you trade away some quality of your players, I mean,
but Drew, who are they trading away right now?
I don't know. I mean, you're not trade. I mean, who's getting tremendous value back? I mean, Pacioretty. Galchenyuk.
Yeah,
what are you getting from Galchenyuk?
Yeah, but hold on a second. You're talking about trading the guy who you just named captain of the team.
You're not going to. I agree.
Well, I referred to him as an article. It's a radio interview.
Again, and I agree with Richie. I mean, you look at the flaws that the Montreal Canadiens have. The flaws, guys, that the Montreal Canadiens have were outlined a lot last year. I mean, they were too reliant on Carey Price's goaltending, mm-hmm. right? They didn't provide enough offense. They didn't have enough possession. Whatever metrics you want to use, right?
Yep.
They didn't have enough secondary scoring. They weren't good enough defensively in front of Carey Price. Mm-hmm. I mean, this you could see this coming, right? But that doesn't mean you start trading away PK Subban, Max Pacioretty. I mean, Galchenyuk. I mean, this is your future. Galchenyuk and Brendan Gallagher. These guys are in the fourth year of their careers here. I mean, these are key pieces. Galchenyuk's a third overall draft pick.
Yeah.
Gallagher was a later draft pick, but I mean, he's a guy that they just signed to a contract extension mm-hmm. recently, right? So I don't think you're going to start to see players like that traded.
I don't think so either.
But, and I think the fact that, as Rich mentioned, the fact that the Montreal Canadiens are, there's a good chance they miss the playoffs this year. Why are you going to start mortgaging the future, right? So I think people in Montreal are losing their minds, and understand.
You're right about that.
I mean, we've all been into a game in Montreal. We've talked to fans. It's the craziest hockey market in the world.
Yeah, I mean, if you think Winnipeg's crazy,
right? Like this fall, it's out of control. This fall from 9-0, and I think it's because the Canadians started off the season 9-0.
Yeah, also sure.
And then Carey Price got injured coming off of an MVP year. Well, everything's gone wrong for them, and people are.
I don't think
anxious.
There's a
the city is going crazy there. Sure. I mean, you call for Therrien's job. Call you just got to take a step back and say, what is this team?
Well,
is this team a playoff team with Carey Price? Yes. Is this team a legitimate Stanley Cup threat without with Carey Price? They're a threat because they have him, but really not a legitimate threat.
I still think they make the playoffs, by the way. I know you don't agree, but I think so. They do.
There's no sign of Carey Price returning. I mean, how can you think they're going to make the playoffs?
I wish we had a video. We could go back to the clip of Carey Price skating around in sweatpants and a windbreaker, and he slammed a stick.
And he broke his stick. That's the big deal. He's frustrated. It's obvious that he's frustrated. But, I mean, if you look at all 30 NHL teams, taking Carey Price off the Montreal Canadiens probably is the, you know, take all 30 teams and you take their star player. The Habs losing Carey Price probably affects them yes. most out of all the teams in the league.
And really, Drew, I look at
You take Ovechkin off Washington. Well, there's still Backstrom there. Obviously, they're not going to be as good without Ovechkin, but you still haven't. I mean, Carey Price is their only. I mean, PK Subban.
You take Crosby off. You have Malkin. Yeah. I mean, there's very few. Drew.
Stamkos, Johnson. Palat.
That's right. I think you're talking about Carey Price.
Doughty, Kopitar.
Yeah, Doughty. That's one I think throw in there.
Fine. That's
you guys know how much I think of him. But
I mean, you took Kane off of Chicago last year. They didn't miss a beat and then he came back.
Drew,
the
Montreal Canadiens are waiting for their Andrew Hammond. They're waiting for their Devan Dubnyk. They're waiting for a goalie to save their season at this
point. Well, there's two different things, right? Because Hammond came from within their organization.
Yep.
And Dubnyk came from a trade. And they made the trade for Scrivens, which
from the Habs organization, actually.
What do you mean?
Dubnyk was with the Habs briefly.
Right, briefly. Yeah. Right. When he went Edmonton, Nashville, Habs. But the point is that they went out and they got somebody. We knew Scrivens wasn't going to be the guy.
No.
So is there somebody now that would be the guy? And the problem is, the thing about Minnesota is they knew they were hoping Backstrom wouldn't be the guy anymore. Unfortunately, Josh Harding had to deal with medical stuff, which you certainly wish he didn't have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. And Kemper wasn't playing good enough.
That's right. He wasn't playing well enough. So they thought, okay, we'll take a chance here. You never know. It could turn into something. The Habs are handcuffed because it's not going to turn into anything.
I'm trying to remember. I mean, the Habs.
Because Price is the guy.
The Habs thought Condon was their goaltender, not of the future, obviously, that's Carey Price, but they thought he was going to be a bona fide solid backup for the team. Because I'm trying to remember who their other goaltender they had that they shipped away.
Dustin Tokarski.
But he's not the guy either.
I know he's not the guy either, but I think they thought Condon was going to be better than he is right now than how he's performed.
But he's never been a number one goalie in the NHL.
That's right.
And Mike Condon, I think, has done an admirable job, but to step in for Carey Price with. He didn't have any NHL experience heading into this year, right?
You can't know.
I mean, he's done it again. I think he's done a great job. He's played 30 plus games, but I mean, this team needs a goalie with NHL experience or a goalie to have a type of magical season that Andrew Hammond had last year. And I agree with you, Drew. I mean, I think, you know, the fall of the Montreal Canadiens has been it's been difficult to watch, really. And I think fans there are very frustrated, but I still think there's enough good players on that team that they can turn it around. But
I'll tell you what,
this is like replacing a Boston Red Sox starting the pressure that you face. Boston Red Sox starting pitcher. Mm-hmm. It's like replacing a top quarterback, like a Peyton Manning in his prime. Like this is the thing. Like that's what it's replacing. That's the pressure that comes with that.
Sure, it's absolutely right. I mean, I think right now though, if the Habs continue to bottom out and if they end up with a top five draft pick, you don't think that's going to
That's what happened with Galchenyuk.
Sure.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Well,
the problem is, it's not always a solution because Galchenyuk hasn't been what they expected him to be.
Right. But if they can, you know, if they are able to get
Van Riemsdyk with the Flyers.
Sure. If they are able to get that dominant player, you're right. Van Riemsdyk and Galchenyuk are cautionary tales. But if they are able to get a top five player who is the real deal, all of a sudden the Montreal Canadiens become a Stanley Cup contender again overnight.
I think, you know, in the long term, and Drew, there are examples that haven't been bad. Both players are good and they're going to get better for sure.
Been world beaters.
Right.
I think the story of Illegal Curve is also a cautionary tale.
It's also true.
It's set to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Dennis Wiedemann 20-game suspension. There was one individual in the room who was correct. It wasn't Ezzy and it wasn't myself. We'll talk about it next on NHL This Week on TSN 1290. Illegal Curve Hockey is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life coming up on June the 5th. join the Legal Curve in raising money for the Riverview Health Center Alzheimer and Dementia Wards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Legal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life or to join Team Legal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca or send us a tweet at Illegal Curve, and we'll provide you with more information on how to join Team Illegal Curve in this great charity event. As you've been cycling, you've been practicing?
It's tough to cycle in the winter.
It is. I see people doing it, and it seems treacherous.
As he's doing spin classes, he just spins around his family room on the floor.
That's good. he's chasing his tail is what he's doing in those instances.
I'm making strides towards getting into the gym.
Yeah.
And once I get into the gym, then I'm going to start to do a little spin class. And then when the weather gets a little bit nicer, then I'll bring out the bike. But I am pumped up to participate in this because we'll raise some money.
Yeah, great cause.
And it's going to be lots of fun. So,
Producer Chris. Producer extraordinaire Chris.
Chris is awesome.
Extraordinaire.
He does great work.
He's given me the thumbs up. We gave him about 8 seconds notice to pull up the clip from Saturday's show where we talked about the Dennis Weidman incident and we all gave our prediction on the number of games he would get for his suspension. In case you missed it, earlier in the day, he was given a 20-game suspension. Here's the clip from Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. How many games?
Career. So
20 games.
You think he gets 20?
I think he should get 20.
You think he should get 20? What do you think he does get at the end of the day when the hearing takes place supposedly on Tuesday?
I think he gets 20.
You think he gets 20? You think the NHL brings down a full 20 games
on
him?
You can't be doing this to officials.
I agree.
Give him 5 games.
I wholeheartedly agree that you can't be doing this to officials.
Now, today, of course, the NHLPA and Dennis Weidman were handed down with the suspension, and they've announced already that they're going to appeal the suspension.
Yep.
The way it works is it will go to Gary Bettman, where he will have the first chance to hear the appeal if he decides not to do anything about it.
I wonder what he'll decide.
Yeah. If he decides not to do anything about it, it can then go to an independent arbiter.
It's worth noting, Drew, that I believe it was 2014, Dan Carcillo appealed that suspension, but this is nothing like that incident. If you remember Dan Carcillo, he didn't deck a linesman from behind. He was being kind of directed towards the penalty box by the linesman, and he kind of shoved the linesman out of the way. And his original suspension, I believe, was 6 games or 10 games, and it was reduced by half. This situation, I agree with Richie. I mean, and Richie was right. You know, kudos to him. I don't think there's
Broken
a good
clock.
Chance. I don't think there's a good chance, Richie, that this is reduced. And if it is reduced, and he gets 10 games, I mean, that's still going to be $250,000. If you look at the amount of money that he's going to lose because of this, it goes to the NHLPA Emergency Assistance Fund, right? But it's still, I mean, it's. It was a serious matter that the NHL had to take seriously, right?
He should. I think that's the right move. Obviously, you know, and again, broken clock twice a day. But I think this is the right decision, obviously. And I think that, you know, certainly you have the right to appeal. And I don't think Gary Bettman's going to change his own mind.
No.
The NHL's mind. If you take it to an arbitrator, I would hope that wouldn't be changed. You can't hit a linesman, an unsuspecting linesman. I don't know in which case you'd suspect it. Maybe in the Carcillo case when the emotion and the different. Yeah. He doesn't see you, and you club him. And I just go back to the reaction of the Nashville Predator bench. They are in such shock. They're just like, what is happening? And so you have to hold him accountable. That's the safety of the officials. And you don't want to – when the officials feel unsafe, that has ramifications on the way the game is called as well. I think this was the right play. And I criticize the NHL when I think they've done something wrong. And we do that often. And we'll give them credit when they've done something right. And – this was a right decision, and I think it was handled appropriately.
Here's the statement the NHLPA put out after the 20-game suspension was announced. Quote, "We strongly disagree with the league's decision to suspend Dennis Weidman. Dennis has played in 11 NHL seasons and almost 800 games without incident. The facts, including the medical evidence presented at the hearing, clearly demonstrate that Dennis had no intention to make contact with the linesman. An appeal
that
has been filed on the player's behalf."
How do you argue that?
Well, now they mentioned the medical evidence in question.
You mean the medical evidence of the player that played the entire game after?
Rick Westhead on TSN from TSN.ca on Twitter earlier this evening. "The NHL's heralded concussion protocol in the Dennis Weidman case wasn't followed. The concussion spotter called down to the Calgary bench. According to NHL protocol, Weidman should have then have been taken to a quiet, distraction-free place and examined by a doctor. He wasn't. After the game, Weidman was diagnosed with a concussion by the Flames team doctor. That's from a source.
I don't think that has anything to do with it.
Well, I mean, first of all, you're diagnosing with a concussion after the incident's taken place. Does it have an effect? I don't know. I'm not going to attack the credibility of that doctor, but you don't know what happens. You know, we've seen you hear stories. We don't know. So I'm not going to say that's the case. However, how many concussions have taken place in the National Hockey League that hasn't resulted in belting a linesman from behind?
It's never happened before. Listen, Drew, we talked about this on Saturday, right?
It's unbelievable.
Dennis Weidman made a mistake, right? And he apologized after, but the fact is, as Rich mentioned, he nailed a linesman from behind. What happens if the linesman breaks his neck, right?
Well, he was hospitalized overnight.
But if he breaks his neck and is unable to ever ref again, you know, officiate again, he's a linesman. You know, I mean, it's serious. And I realize, you know, maybe the concussion, he was a little bit woozy, but he played after. And again, I honestly think that the NHL was in a position where they had to suspend him for at least 10 games. They decided to go with 20. You just can't do it.
You, in this case, Dennis Weidman should apologize, say it was a mistake, come out and say, certainly not going to happen again. I apologize to the official. I respect officials. Let's get this over with and move forward. That's, to me, what you do there.
Here's the quote from the Calgary Flames. This is Brian Burke, president of hockey operations. Quote, we were informed earlier today that our player, Dennis Weidman, was suspended for contact with an official in last Wednesday's game against Nashville. We disagree with the severity of today's suspension ruling and maintain that Dennis's collision with the linesman was unintentional and accidental.
Wow.
We agree that our official safety and well-being is of extreme importance in order to allow them to perform their duties. They perform an invaluable but underappreciated role in our game. We support sanctions against players who make deliberate contact with any official.
Oh my God.
However, unintentional and accidental contact does occur at times in our game. We will have no further comment on the matter at this time.
See, guys, I love Brian Burke. Like, you guys know I'm a big Brian Burke fan, and I know Richie, you know, likes Brian Burke.
I think Don Henderson was the official at the Brian Burke barn fight with Kevin Lowe.
No, but I mean,
did you hear about that story?
I did. No, but Richie, I mean, Dennis Weidman clearly knew what he was doing there.
You make a mistake and you apologize and you move on.
I mean, all due respect to Brian Burke, I don't see how you can really excuse a player for doing something like that. Like, you got to take responsibility, and Dennis Weidman has taken responsibility. And
has he though?
It's one of those apologizing, right?
Right, but I mean, like, are you after talking to your advisors, whatever it may be, are you really taking responsibility here, Ez?
I hope he does.
I don't know how much pressure the PA says to put appeal up on the appeal because it costs money. I mean, it costs them salary, and that's what they're worried about, is a large part. But Brian Burke was a disciplinarian before. He's worn many hats.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I know he's defending his player. But come on, I agree.
He's been an agent. He's been in management. He's been a player. I mean, like, again, if you get into a car accident, maybe this isn't the best example. If you get into a car accident and you injure someone and you happen to be a little bit woozy during the day, that's not going to excuse you from what you did, right? And I mean, I think the analogy applies here. I mean, I at the end of the day, I think the NHL had no choice really but to suspend him for 20 games. I mean, the video, Richie, was circulating now in the digital age, and everybody was watching it. And if you watch it, and I believe everybody here has watched it, I mean, he kind of, as Rich said, the Predators bench is looking at this and saying, like, what is this guy doing? He just decked a linesman.
Yeah, well, that's the one. In the moment, they're watching the game, and they're thinking to themselves, what is this guy doing?
Just cross-checked the linesman.
Again, you know what? You make mistakes, you move on.
I think the best part about the Flames statement, you know, the Flames statement is completely asinine.
Well, they're going to defend their own player, right?
Well, no, I have no problem with them defending their player, but the thing that they can't say is they can't say, you know, which I believe happened, is that the player was concussed, but the Flames can't say the player was concussed because they left him in the game for the rest of the contest.
There's only so many arguments you can make without, you know.
That's right. And the Flames are trying to
sucking and blowing a bit there.
Completely and totally, because the Flames, you know, obviously violated NHL concussion protocol, by not, you know, adhering to the demand of the spotter to remove Weidman from the play or get him checked out, according to Rick Westhead.
I mean, how many guys have been concussed and ever?
Of course. Of course. But if, but you know, it, the narrative is different. If the incident,
go in the game and make mistakes, you know, does he like turning the puck over so blatantly that you have to take?
No, of course not. But I promise you it's looked at in a different vein if he doesn't play the rest of the game and he's immediately diagnosed with a concussion. If he gets hit, he skates off, he cross-checks Henderson, and then he's immediately diagnosed with a concussion, the conversation we're having today is different.
Yeah, I agree with that,
the
Drew.
The problem is the Flames kept him in the game, that. And now today, you know, a week later, they can't then use the concussion as an excuse because the organization in Calgary screwed up.
Drew, I know you want to go to break here, but...
Yeah, this is exciting. I'm fine talking about this.
Another thing to consider here, guys, is the Calgary Flames are in the middle of a playoff race, and they need Weidman.
Everybody's in the middle. They're going to allow 33 teams in the playoffs this year.
But you know what I mean, Richie? Like, the
Flames aren't in a playoff. I mean, the Flames are behind the Jets, for God's sakes.
No, but, I mean, in the Pacific Division, they're in the playoff race.
Yeah, they're 8 points back. I know they're in the playoff race.
They're still in it.
I know.
Right? They need wins here, and Weidman is a top four defenseman.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be without him for at least the next 20 games.
I think the Flames are more upset that they probably can't trade Weidman now if they wanted to.
Was he, I mean, we think
5.25. Well, I mean, you have Hamilton, Brody, yeah. Giordano. What's going to happen with Russell? He's probably on the block. Do they want to trade Weidman? I don't know, but it's a lot of money. They have some signings to make. I'm not sure. But I'm just saying that hurts their chances if they think they have a chance, and probably hurts the ability to move him if he's going to be out for most of the remaining games.
We did this on Saturday. What happens when they appeal? Assuming Bettman upholds the 20 games and it goes to an independent arbitrator, does it stay at 20 or do you think it moves?
I think it stays.
How can I argue with Richie after, you know, he called 20 games?
You argue with Richie all the time.
No, you know what? I think they're going to stick at 20 games.
Well.
You say arbitrators, like, this is not numbers game, really, Drew. Like,
yeah, it's kind of dry.
Arbitrators are going to be used to the arguments that this is more of an argument that I would guess an arbitrator would be more comfortable with. And he scored 32 goals, and no, he scored 21 goals. And, you know, like, I mean, obviously the goal total is going to be the same, but he's comparable to this player and this player. You're talking
this
about
salary arbitration.
That's right.
Hey, what say you, Richie, or Drew? Are you going to go against Richie? Is this going to be an adversarial situation here?
No, I think it probably stays at the 20 that you mentioned. It's okay. You know, the Flames.
I
hold
think,
a lot of blame here.
I think the player deserves blame here.
Player
too,
deserves
Drew.
All the blame. Weidman deserves blame.
Yeah,
Flames deserve a lot of blame too. If he, because I, you know, the fact they kept him in that game with supposedly with a concussion.
You know what? Again. He didn't hold on to the linesman because he didn't know where he was. He decked him.
Yeah. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look around the NHL, some odds and ends to wrap up the Wednesday midweek show. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment of NHL This Week for this Wednesday, the 3rd of February. Programming note, next week's midweek is bright and early, Monday, February 8th, right after the Super Bowl, or the day after the Super Bowl. We'll have NHL midweek for you coming up on Monday of next week.
We're going to have to do some Super Bowl predictions on Saturday's show.
Yeah, on Saturday's show we can do some Super Bowl predictions. And then, you know, of course, Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show will be at 9 a.m. on TSN 1290. We'll look back at Friday night's Jets-Hurricanes game.
Yes.
Look ahead to Saturday night's Jets-Avalanche game as well.
Drew, I'm gonna preview. I'm pulling for the Broncos. I mean, I'm not a Broncos fan, but I'm a Peyton Manning fan.
Didn't you just say you were going to preview the Super Bowl on Saturday?
What I was going to say is I'm going to predict that I'm going to have terrible stomach aches after the Super Bowl's over because the last couple of years...
Is that really anything we needed to share? Like,
that's really, yeah. I mean, we'll talk about that on Saturday.
Do we have to talk about that
on
Saturday?
I want to have a segment on how Thomas Davis can break his arm and then play 2 weeks later in the Super Bowl. But yeah. I mean, that we will talk about on Saturday.
Yeah, we can talk.
Well, we won't actually talk about it.
Right. The final segment of the show is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. Some odds and sods from around the NHL. Let's start in Edmonton last night. Connor McDavid. I mean, what a return for McDavid coming back from... the injury. He's been out for so many months at this point in time. Comes back with probably the goal of the year. I mean, could very well be the goal of the year, what he did to the Blue Jackets defense last night.
Yeah, I mean, when you're looking at Connor McDavid, all the hype, it's kind of like, he's kind of akin to a LeBron James. It appears based on the hype, and LeBron James, as much as you could have the hype years ago without social media as it is today, he lived up to that hype, and McDavid seems to be the same that way. Like, he seems to be just as dominant. And if you watch, I mean, the goals is just an incredible exhibition of skill. But you just think to yourself, the age, and it's kind of like LeBron James comes in, is dominant at such a young age and only going to get better. And that's the thing. You know, people talked about the Buffalo game, the Winnipeg, about Kane and Bigot, and obviously that had value to it. But the McDavid in Winnipeg, that game to me has value to it, just to see a player like that.
Yeah, that's on March 6th, I believe.
It's a Sunday. There's a back.
Montreal, right?
Yeah. A rare back-to-back home at home. Saturday against Montreal, Sunday against Edmonton.
Yeah, Drew, to Richie's point, I mean, the goal, I mean, it was incredible, right? Just so much skill and talent, as you mentioned, Rich.
Yeah.
But the fact that it was Connor McDavid's first game back from injury, and he was able to do that. I mean, the best thing, I think, going for the NHL right now might be Connor McDavid. I mean, you're looking at the best prospect since Sidney Crosby, might be the best prospect since Lemieux or Gretzky, right? I mean, that's how good he is.
Yep.
And this is his first year. He's only going to get better. So it's awesome. I mean, Edmonton really did win the lottery by getting Connor McDavid. I mean, you have a franchise player there, that, and you're going to see so many of these goals. I mean, you're going to see, you might see 20 more goals like that this year.
Well, he might win the scoring title next year.
The NHL scoring title. According to Frank Saravelli, during that rush against Columbus yesterday, McDavid was clocked at more than 40 kilometers an hour with the puck on his stick.
Was Frank behind the net with the radar gun?
I'm not 100% sure how he came up with
that.
I saw
him in Philadelphia. He was in Philadelphia, and that's hockey earlier.
He's everywhere. He's omnipresent, our good friend Frank is. But, I mean, it was incredible. I mean, it's nice to see a player like – I mean, it's tremendous to see a player like that with that kind of skill in the league. The NHL won't promote him, of course, because he plays in Edmonton.
Well, you know
what,
Drew,
doesn't promote their stars.
Well, you know, you're seeing him on ESPN, and you're going to see him more. Maybe there'll be a change there, and there ought to be based on how talented he is. And you should market the players. I agree with you. Like the NBA does, they market players very well, star players, and – if he scores goals like that, he's going to make them have no choice.
You know,
and he seems like a real good kid, too. You know,
could you see
considering how much attention he's got? It's amazing the pressure he's under. We talked about the game day skate. I mean, it's absurd that would be on TV, but the idea that he's able to handle all this pressure in quite a respectful manner, you have to give him credit.
There's talk. The question entering this week is the possibility of him coming back to win the Calder Trophy.
Well,
that might be tough.
Yeah, I mean, unlikely, because Panarin has been that good. Mm-hmm. And Panarin has been that good with Kane, but Kane is dependent on Panarin as well. And so I would think that it'd be very hard to catch him. I don't think anybody else there is overly threatening, though.
I think Connor Hellebuyck deserves a little bit of attention as well.
That's fair. But, I mean, the team's is not going to be competitive enough for him to get that high of consideration.
Yeah, it seems like
he's been very good, as he, of course.
Oilers.
Ehlers, no. I mean, the thing about McDavid will pass Ehlers' point total and playing way less games.
Just trying to get Drew going.
Yeah.
You're not getting me going. You're welcome to make any of your asinine comments on air. It doesn't bother me in the least bit.
Ehlers is having a good rookie
Ehlers
year.
Ehlers is having a good rookie
Drew, what do you think of the logo from when you were a kid at the Maple Leafs?
Well, I tweeted last night that that's very clever. The Maple Leafs, of course, unveiling a new logo that was...
Chris liked that one.
It harkened back to their glory days in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, hence the joke there. But I tweeted last night as I was watching the Jets, the Jets game was getting down to the final minutes, and my Twitter feed was being, overwhelmed with comments about people from there talking about the unveiling of the Maple Leafs logo. I tweeted, would you like me to send out a picture of it, or would you just rather I bludgeon you over the head with a steel pole? Because that's sort of what it felt like. It's the same damn logo.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's the same logo.
It's the best.
Montreal Canadiens don't have a big ceremony every time. I mean, first of all, the Canadiens don't tweak their logo because it's the Montreal Canadiens
it's
logo.
Like the Yankees.
Yeah. Don't tweak it.
Yeah.
Like, was anybody sitting around saying, what we really need is a new Toronto Maple Leafs logo?
It's amazing what they're trying to do with the Leafs here. I mean, I can't wait for the next month of hearing about how their terrible players are good and should be traded for high draft picks.
Richie, I think we've heard enough of Drew, and we need to hear from Eitan here.
I don't
really care what Drew has to say.
Hang on, before we bring in Eitan, and Eitan's been in studio enjoying the show. At least I think he's been enjoying the show today. But there's an article that has the headline right now. You won't want to read it. Is Maple Leafs logo is the latest example of Shanahan's way.
What does that mean?
It's like unbelievable. Yeah, it's seriously unbelievable.
Actually, though, what does that mean?
Are you producing the John Scott movie? Like, did anything happen this week in the NHL real?
No. Well, it was the All-Star break, so nothing happened in the NHL that was real.
Oh, man.
Did you watch the All-Star game, Eitan? I'll bring you in here for the last couple minutes before we have to head out for the day.
A little bit.
So, you know, do you usually watch the All-Star game?
Usually.
Okay, because they say it's for kids. And, you know, the three of us over here, we're all old and we're all relatively cynical at this point.
Drew's
in our
a
lives.
Lot older, though.
Yeah, I'm a lot older than these guys, a whopping year or so. But, you know, so it's nice to have a kid's opinion in studio who tell us what he really thinks about the All-Star game if you get excited to watch it.
John Scott wasn't really something impressive.
Well, yeah, okay, Eitan wrote us a note. We're going to get back to you, Eitan. You wrote us a note. I want to read it on air.
Please.
Brought us cookies, of course, great cookies.
Awesome cookies.
So, dear guys, thank you so much for the amazing opportunity. I've been listening for 3 years.
Wow.
And have dreamed of calling into the show, but thought you guys would think it's a prank and laugh and think it's a prank. Of course, we wouldn't. And his last comment, keep your stick on the ice.
Like really?
Ralph and St. James.
Channeling Ralph and St. James. Do you listen to Ralph call into the post-game show a lot?
Yes.
Okay, well, there you go. Ralph's got a fan base. So Ralph's fan base is now more than our fan base.
Ralph has a huge fan base out there.
Well, I mean, you do more of the pre and post.
Chris does all of them. Yeah, Chris would know.
Chris would know. Chris, you and Ralph got to be like this. Fingers, you know, pretty tight. Best friends. Yeah, there you go.
Eitan, would you watch a John Scott movie? Probably, eh?
A 30-second clip of different fights?
I like it.
The trailer, maybe.
I mean, you know, I love how the NHL, first of all, the best part about the All-Star game
is... Jay Unright tweet, somebody showed me.
Yeah.
That was funny.
With the NHL,
why don't you tell people what that was?
I mean, I don't have the tweet exactly, but the NHL at the end of it, when they refuse to even acknowledge John Scott as an MVP candidate, and he only wins it again because of the write-in vote from fans, and then they tweet out the NHL, congratulations, John Scott, we're so proud of you, or something like that, and Jay Unright tweets at them, you guys have done everything in your power to eliminate him from being a story, and now you're going to celebrate? Him, just go away is pretty much what Jay Onwright's tweet was. That's the best part, is that they wouldn't put him up as the MVP for people to vote in, and fans still wrote him in and voted him in at this point in time.
So, Eitan, what was your favorite part of the skills competition All-Star game?
I thought to see him score was something, and not just once, but twice.
That's right. See, you know, he knows his stuff.
Yeah, he's watching the game. He's watching closer than I was.
Two goals and a fake fight.
Yeah, a fake fight with Patrick Kane, and they skate and they carried him off on his shoulders.
Well, he's played on so many teams, right? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I'm sure he's light, well liked. Yeah. I mean,
we're just talking about AHL.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got friends in all sorts of dressing rooms. That's it for NHL this week on this Wednesday evening. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Keener Jerseys, and the Rady Fitness Center. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and again, the website with all your Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is illegalcurve.com. For producer Chris, for special guest Eitan, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.